the world's greatest short story. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Nelson Olmsted's review of the world's greatest short stories. Those stories which constitute a rich heritage of excellent entertainment, all blessed with a touch of genius. Tonight, it's our special pleasure to present a tale by a very recent English and American author. Permission has been granted for this review of John Galsworthy's Quality.
I knew him from the days of my extreme youth, because he made my father's boots. Inhabiting with his elder brother two little shops let into one in a small by street, now no more, but then most fashionably placed in the West End. That tenement had a certain quiet distinction. There was no sign upon his face that he made for any of the royal family, merely his own German name of Gessler Brothers, and in the window a few pairs of boots. And they were beautiful. A pair of pumps, so inexpressibly slim, the patent leathers with the cloth tops making water come into one's mouth. And the tall brown riding boots with a marvelous, sooty glow, as if, though new, they'd been worn 100 years. Those pairs could have been made only by one who saw before him the soul of boots. These thoughts, of course, came to me later, though even when I was promoted to him at the age of perhaps 14, some inkling haunted me of the dignity of himself and his brother. For to make boots, such boots as he made, it seemed to me then and still seems to me mysterious and wonderful. I remember well my shy remark one day while stretching out to him my youthful foot. Isn't it awfully hard to do, Mr. Gessler? And his answer, given with a sudden smile out of the sardonic redness of his beard, "Ach ja, it is an art." Himself, he was as little as if he'd been made from leather, with his yellow, crinkly face and crinkly reddish hair and beard, and neat folds slanting down his cheeks to the corners of his mouth, and his guttural, one-toned voice. For leather is a sardonic substance and stiff and slow of purpose. And that was the character of his face, save that his eyes, which were gray-blue, had in them that simple gravity of one secretly possessed by the ideal. One went in, not as into most shops, in the mood of, "Please serve me and let me go," but restfully, as one entered the church, and sitting on a single wooden chair waited, for there was never anybody there. And soon over the top edge of that sort of well, which formed the shop, there would be seen his face, or that of his elder brother, peering down. A guttural sound and the tip-tap of fast slippers beating the narrow wooden stairs. And he would stand before one without coat, a little bent, in leather apron with sleeves turned back, blinking, as if awakened from some dream of boots. Or like an owl surprised in the daylight and annoyed at this interruption. And I would say, "How do you do, Mr. Gessler? Could you make me a pair of Russian leather boots?" Without a word, he would leave me, retiring whence he came, or into the other portion of the shop, and I would continue to rest in the wooden chair, inhaling the incense of his trade. And soon he would come back, holding in his thin, veined hand a piece of gold-brown leather. With eyes fixed on it, he would remark, "Oh, what beautiful leather." And when I, too, would admire, he would speak again, "Then do you want them?" And I would answer, "Oh, as soon as conveniently can." And he would say, "Tomorrow, fortnight." And then I would murmur, "Oh, thank you, and good morning, Mr. Gessler." "Good morning," he would reply, still looking at the leather in his hand. And as I moved to the door, I would hear the tip-tap of his best slippers restoring him up the stairs to his dream of boots. I cannot forget that day on which I had occasion to say to him, "Mr. Gessler, that last pair of town walking boots creaked, you know." He looked at me for a time without replying, as if expecting me to withdraw or qualify the statement, and then said,
"It shouldn't have creaked."
"It did, I'm afraid."
"You gotten them wet before they found themselves?"
"I don't think so." And at that, he lowered his eyes as if hunting from memory of those boots. And I felt sorry that I'd mentioned this grave thing.
"Send them back. I will look at them."
I had a feeling of compassion for my creaking boots. So well could I imagine the powerful, long curiosity of regard which he would bend on them.
"Some boots are bad from birth. If I can do nothing with them, I take them off to Bill."
Once and only once, I went absent-mindedly into a shop in a pair of boots bought in emergency from some large firm. He took my order without showing me any leather, and I could feel his eyes penetrating the inferior integument on my foot. At last he said, "Those are not my boots." The tone was not one of anger, nor of sorrow, nor even of contempt, but there was in it something quiet that froze the blood. And he put his hand down and pressed a finger on a place for the left boot, endeavoring to be fashionable, but not quite comfortable.
"It hurts you there. Those big worms have no self-respect. Trash."
And then, as if something had given way within him, he spoke long and bitterly. It was the only time I ever heard him discuss the conditions and hardships of the trade.
"They get it all. They get it by advertisement, not by work. They take it away from us who love our boots. It comes to this. Presently, I have no work. Every year it gets less. Yeah, you will see."
And looking at his lined face, I saw things I'd never noticed before. Bitter things. And bitter struggle. But a lot of gray hairs there seemed suddenly in his red beard. As best I could, I explained the circumstances of the purchase of those ill-omened boots. But his face and voice made so deep an impression that during the next few minutes, I ordered many pairs. Nemesis fell. They lasted more terribly than ever. And I was not able, conscientiously, to go to him for nearly 2 years. And when at last I went, I was surprised to find that the shop was half as big as it was before. I went in and said, "Well, Mr. Gessler, how are you?" He came close and peered at me.
"I'm pretty well. But my elder brother is dead."
How aged and wan he was. And never before had I heard him mention his brother. Much shocked, I murmured, "Oh, I'm sorry."
"Yeah. He was a good man. He made a good boot. But he is dead. He could not get over losing the other shop." "Yeah. Do you want any boots?"
I ordered several pairs. It was very long before they came, but they were better than ever. One simply could not wear them out. And soon after that, I went abroad. It was over a year before I was again in London. And the first shop I went to was my old friend. I had left a man of 60. I came back to one of 75, pinched and worn and tremulous, who genuinely this time did not at first know me. "Oh, Mr. Gessler, how splendid your boots are. See, I've been wearing this pair nearly all the time I've been abroad, and they're not even half worn out, are they?" He looked long at my boots, a pair of Russia leather, and his eyes seemed to regain steadiness. And putting his hand on my instep, he said,
"Do they fit you ill? I had troubles with that pair, I remember."
I assured him that they fitted beautifully.
"Do you want any boots? I can make them quickly. It is a slack time."
"Please. Please, I want boots all around, every kind."
"I will make a fresh model. Your foot must be bigger."
And with his utter slowness, he traced around my foot and felt my toes, and only once looked up to say,
"Did I tell you my brother was dead?"
To watch him was painful. So feeble had he grown. I was glad to get away. I'd given those boots up when one evening they came. Opening the parcel, I set the four pair out in a row. And then one by one I tried them on, and there was no doubt about it. In shape and fit and finish and quality of leather, they were the best he'd ever made me. And in the mouth of one of the town walking boots, I found his bill. The amount was the same as usual, but it gave me quite a shock. He had never before sent it till quarter day. So I flew downstairs and wrote a check and posted it at once with my own hand. A week later, passing the little street, I thought I would go in and tell him how splendidly the new boots fitted. But when I came to where his shop had been, his name was gone. Still there in the window were the slim pumps, the patent leathers with the cloth tops, and the city riding boots. I went in very much disturbed. In the two little shops, again made into one, was a young man with an English face. "Mr. Gessler in?"
"No, sir. No, he ain't. We've taken the shop over. You've seen our name, no doubt. Next door, we make for some very good people."
"Oh, yes, but Mr. Gessler..."
"Oh, he's dead."
"Dead? Oh, but I received these boots from him last Wednesday week."
Eh, shock and gill. Poor man starved himself.
Good Lord.
Slow starvation, the doctor called it. You say he went to work in such a way. Would keep the shop on. Wouldn't have a soul touch his boots except himself. And when he got an order, it took him such a time. People won't wait, you know. He lost everybody. And there he'd sit, going on and on. I will say that for him. Not a man in London made a better boot. But look at the competition. He never advertised. Would have only the best leather, too, and do it all himself. Well, there it is. What could you expect of his ideas?
Yes, but starvation.
Oh, that might be a bit flowery, as the saying is. But I know myself he was sitting over his boots day and night to the very last. You see, I used to watch him. Never gave himself time to eat. Never had a penny in the house. All went in rent and liver. How he lived so long, I don't know. He regular let his fire go out. He was a character. But he made good boots.
Yes. He made good boots. And I turned and went out quickly. For I did not want him to know that I could hardly see.
This has been the story entitled Quality, and now here's Nelson Olmsted for a word. Thank you. John Galsworthy, one of the most beloved and revered of the modern authors, wrote this story that we've presented about 1912. And after reading this story many times, it's my opinion that it's not just a story, not just some fabrication of a brilliant mind, but a story born out of actual situation. Quality possesses that beautiful warmth and reality so readily recognizable as Galsworthy's. For in all his writings is a liberal and humane attitude toward social problems. Born in England in 1867, he lived both there and in the United States, producing many plays and novels and short stories. It was a great shock to the world when in February of 1933, the news of his death was announced. We lost the man, but his memory is with us, nor will it dim, for his work is destined to immortalize him. Quality appears in the volume Inn of Tranquility, published by Charles Scribner's Sons, to whom we are indebted for the right to review this story tonight. Next week, on The World's Greatest Short Stories, we plan to present something in the way of a thriller, a narrative entitled What Was It? By FitzJames O'Brien. It's a mystery, so try to be with us and see if you can answer the enigma, What Was It? Until then, good night and good reading. WBAP presents Nelson Olmsted in a review of the world's greatest short stories every Sunday night, 10 o'clock. Remember, be with us next week for the story, What Was It? By FitzJames O'Brien.